Folks always ask us, how much will I need to retire? And the answer is, it depends. It depends on your needs, lifestyle, and one important factor. Hi, I'm Rob West. That other important piece of the retirement puzzle is, how much are you willing and able to cut from your budget? I'll talk about that first today, and then it's on to your calls and questions on any financial topic at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Okay, I think we can assume that just about everybody will have less income during retirement. So it's really helpful that many of the expenses associated with work, especially work outside the home, go away when you retire. Because of this, many experts say you'll only need 75 to 80% of your working income when you retire. Now, why is that, you ask? Well, because your transportation, clothing, and dining out expenses, mostly for lunch, drop considerably when you're no longer working. That's all good, but the problem is studies show the average retirement budget is only about 60% of working income. So if you're working and making, let's say, $75,000 a year, you'll need at least 75% of that, or a little over $56,000 in retirement. But if you're on track to generate only 60% of your working budget from Social Security benefits and income from your investments, you'll be short $11,250 a year, or about $940 a month. That means you'll have to work longer to build more savings that generate more retirement income, or continue to work part-time to make up that $940 monthly shortfall. Unless you're able to cut your retirement expenses enough to close that $940 gap, or at least make it smaller. Now, how do you do that? Well, let's start with the one that's probably the most obvious. It's the big house you raised your family in, but which is now largely empty because they've all moved on and have their own houses. Do you really need all that room? Probably not. So now's a great time to downsize into something smaller. Besides lowering your maintenance costs, utility bills, and taxes, downsizing should leave you with cash left over that you can convert into an income stream, getting you closer to your retirement needs. As long as you've lived in the home for 2 out of the last 5 years, you can exempt the first $250,000 in capital gains on the sale of your home, or $500,000 for married couples. And if you're worried about having enough room when the grandkids visit, take some of that savings and get bunk beds or air mattresses. They have really nice ones now with built-in air pumps. Now, the next biggest way to cut your retirement budget is with transportation. If neither you or your spouse is working, do you really need 2 vehicles? Probably not, and you can sell one and pocket more cash, plus cutting repair costs, registration fees, and insurance premiums. And if you and your spouse sometimes have to be away from home in 2 different places at the same time, consider using a ride-sharing service and leave the driving to someone else. It might cost you $3 or $4 a mile, but you can afford that occasional expense with all of the money you're saving. Now, let's look at insurance next, and specifically disability and life. First off, disability insurance is designed to replace lost income when you're recovering from an injury, an illness, and not able to work. Obviously, if you're retired and not working, you have no working income to replace, and therefore you have no need for disability insurance. Yet some people still carry it. Drop it the day you retire. Now, what about life insurance in retirement? Well, if your children are now grown up and out of the house, providing for themselves and their families, they're no longer dependent on your income, so you can cut back on life insurance, which, by the way, gets increasingly expensive as we grow older. Also, look at interest on credit card balances and other consumer debt. It's never good, but downright terrible when you're retired and trying to adjust to a smaller income. Take some of that cash you've freed up with the previous suggestions and pay off the credit cards just as soon as you can. Oh, and one final thought. You'll probably have plenty of time in retirement, so consider giving more of it to your church or favorite ministry. Christians shouldn't retire from something, but to something. Folks, this can be one of the most incredible seasons of your life if you lean into it and ask God what He has as you leverage your wisdom and experience for His glory. All right, your calls are next. The number, 800-525-7000. By the way, you can call that 24/7, 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
In the history of ancient Israel, it's amazing how often great victory was followed by great failure. Psalm 106 describes why, saying, "They gave no thought to your miracles. They did not remember your many kindnesses, and they rebelled by the sea, the Red Sea. Yet He saved them for His name's sake, to make His mighty power known." And that's what makes the gospel good news. God's salvation comes despite our failures. If His salvation depended on our goodness, we never could be saved. But like Israel was delivered from Egypt for His name's sake, also Christ died and rose for sinners like us, not because we deserved it, but for His name's sake. Try out Anchor Devotional today. Visit getanchor.com.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
The world around us is constantly challenging the way we think. That's why we need a constant source of information that's based on the unchanging Word of God. I'm Jeff Shambley, and I invite you to join me for The Stand Radio, a weekly program that highlights the latest trends in culture, faith, and family. You'll hear insightful interviews with a biblical worldview application. The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Crossmark Global Investments. They are a faith-based firm with a goal of offering values-based investments to help align financial choices and faith, ensuring a portfolio that reflects what matters most. Crossmark does this through investment solutions that span the capital market spectrum, from large cap to small cap strategies, including equity, fixed income, and balanced strategies. They are led by industry veteran Bob Dahl, CFA, a regular guest on the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at crossmarkglobal.com.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services LLC.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. We're going to dive into your questions here in just a moment. That number to call today to get in on the conversation, well, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. We would love to tackle any financial question today, whether it's living, giving, owing, or growing God's money, no matter what you have on your mind today. Let's get that into the conversation here. 800-525-7000. We've got lines open. We're ready for you. You can call right now. In the news today, economists are pessimistic that the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates again at its next meeting. Reuters this week polled over 100 economists, basically asking them to predict if the Fed would cut rates, and by a slim majority, it was thumbs down. The reasons given were concerns about lingering inflation exacerbated by expected policy changes by the incoming Trump administration that could spark stronger growth in the economy. Those would include possible tax cuts and deregulation. We'll, of course, have to wait and see what happens to interest rates this time around. The Fed meets again on January the 29th, and this is going to be something to take a look at, and we'll see. Clearly, we were expecting late last year that 2025 would prove to be that year where we saw a pretty significant drawdown in the Fed's balance sheet and a reduction in the interest rates with multiple rate cuts. Now, economists, just given everything that's going on, the prospect of growth, the fact that inflation is not getting to that 2% target, and it looks like it really won't, might they leave interest rates right here, especially if we can avoid that recession that many have been predicting for some time now? It's going to be an interesting year. There's no question about that. A lot of exciting things to watch, and we'll certainly be here to walk alongside you in that. Jerry Boyer will be along today, and we'll get his take on all of that. Looking forward to having Walker Wildman here as well to give us an update on corporate engagement. What's the AFA Action doing in this area of corporate engagement? Well, we'll tell you about it straight ahead in the final segment of the broadcast. But right now, let's turn our attention to your questions. Whatever's happening in your financial life today, we'd love to help you tackle that in light of biblical truth. Call right now. Lines are open. We're ready to take those questions. 800-525-7000. Let's begin in Georgia today. Hi, Rosie. How can I help?
Hey, I have a question about probate. I have written a will, and I have willed all my property, everything I have, to my son. Will he still have to go through probate, even though it's in a will?
Yes. So everybody, unless you have a trust in place, you know, or a beneficiary designation where it passes directly outside of probate, you know, the process, even with a simple estate and a will, is typically required to legally transfer ownership of assets to beneficiary, and probate is a court-supervised process that ensures that, first of all, the deceased's will is valid, and then that the debts and taxes are paid, and then finally that the assets are distributed correctly. So starting with that first process of validating the will, you know, probate is going to ensure that the will was properly signed, the person who made it, what's called the testator, had the legal capacity and intent to do it. No one's contesting the will. Without probate, there's no official legal recognition of the will, which could complicate transferring the assets. And then, you know, it is possible, as I said, that some assets could transfer to beneficiaries without probate, even with a will. And that would be real estate, you know, where there's a transfer on death deed, or if it's titled solely, you know, in the deceased's name, bank accounts, you know, things like that, investment accounts that have a beneficiary designation. Probate will also ensure that, you know, any debts and taxes are paid. So the executor, which is appointed through probate by way of the will, would identify and pay those debts, and then, you know, filing and paying any applicable estate taxes. Usually there aren't any, but any final income tax returns. And then the probate process is what, you know, gives the authority to the executor to allow that individual to act on the deceased's behalf, settling financial accounts, selling property, distributing assets, those kinds of things. So that's why, you know, that is still necessary. Again, the only place where it would not be is with joint ownership, where, you know, it automatically goes to a surviving spouse, let's say, beneficiary designation, or with a trust. Does that make sense, though?
It does. I understand. I had thought we would avoid that if I had the will directly made to this son.
Yeah.
But I understand why.
Yeah.
No.
The will is what provides the instructions and names the person, the representative that's going to handle it. But the probate court is ultimately what gives that person the authority to act on behalf of the deceased. So hopefully that clears it up. Rosie, thank you for being on the program today. May the Lord bless you. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. That's 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open today. We'd love to tackle whatever is on your mind today. Calls are coming in, but we still have room for you. 800-525-7000. You know, a lot of people wonder about wills versus trusts. And let me just, explain quickly the difference, because, you know, some people are wondering, well, wait a minute, if I have one, do I need the other? And when do I use the trust versus the will? And I'm not an attorney, so you always want to get the counsel of an attorney. But just generally speaking, these are two distinct estate planning tools. And while they both help to ensure your assets are distributed according to your wishes after death, they function differently and do serve unique purposes. Namely, first of all, when it takes effect. So a will only goes into effect after death. The trust takes effect immediately once it's created and funded and, you know, can provide provisions whereby during your lifetime, the person named as the trustee could handle your affairs, even if you're incapacitated. A primary difference is a will is subject to probate, as we just talked about with Rosie, whereas the trust avoids probate if funded properly, and it can keep matters private. Control over assets is a big difference. So with a will, you specify asset distribution after death, again, with a trust, because it goes into effect immediately once it's created and funded. A trust can manage and distribute assets both during life, if revocable, and after death. Privacy, as I mentioned, is different. A will is a part of the public record. A trust remains private unless contested. The cost to set up is different. A will is generally less expensive. The trust is a little bit more expensive and complex to set up. Incapacity is another big one. I touched on this, but a trust is allowing you to manage assets if you become incapacitated via the trustee. A will cannot do that. You cannot manage assets by way of a will if you become incapacitated. Flexibility is also an issue. With a will, you can amend or revoke until death. With a revocable trust, that can be amended as well. Irrevocable trust cannot. So hopefully that helps give you a little more information. More phone calls right after this. Stay with us.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
FaithFi is grateful for support from OneAscent. OneAscent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. OneAscent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good. To explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values, more information is available at OneAscent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian Credit Counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
If you've listened any length of time, you're aware that we often underscore the importance of preparing for the future. Well, as you look into the future, I suggest you consider the AFA Foundation in your estate planning. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You're young. You don't go to the doctor that often. Yet health insurance is still so expensive. If your health insurance costs too much, maybe you should switch to an affordable alternative. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers programs starting under $100 per month. Check off the affordable box on your list and get back to what you really love, running your business or caring for your kids, and have peace of mind while doing it. Visit chministries.org/faithfi to enroll today.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Let's see. Let's head to Texas. Diana, how can I help you?
Yes, sir. I have an embarrassing, if nothing else, because of my age. I'm 77. I have my Social Security and my widow's pension deposited to that bank in Philadelphia. The name of the bank is Pathway. Social Security chose it for me. Mm. And it came to the point where my death burial insurance notified me that I had lost it already due to non-payment.
Yes.
So I went and took my statement, and I noticed that they had taken for that particular month, 3 months ago. So my next question was calling the bank, and I did, and I asked them, could I possibly have a printout of the last 3 years, you know, month by month? And it showed that all my payments were up to date, but yet they pulled more than $3,000.
Okay. So and for this policy, they were pulling more out than the premium? Is that right?
No, they were doing it. They were doing it monthly.
Okay.
But when they notified me that I no longer had the policy, I said, why? The payments were being made. No, ma'am. You hadn't made payments for a long time. So at that point, the bank came in, and we found out that payments were being drawn. So the policy owners are, if that's what you call it, it's American Amicable, and they own like maybe 50 insurance companies. They're popular and well-known.
Okay.
The agent that sold me the policy 3 years ago gave me all the information I needed. But it was a female. And she, the bottom line was, she asked me for my bank account number in order to withdraw the payment. And that's the only way they would deal with me because of my age.
Yes.
So I was kind of like, what am I going to do? You know, it's not like door-to-door salesmen come to your home anymore and knock on your door. Do you want insurance? And these were people that reached me by way of scammers, is what I call them. I don't know what anybody else calls them. Mm.
So I'm trying to understand what the issue was. So did they pull out more than they were entitled to or access other funds in your account?
No, they didn't access other funds, but they claimed I hadn't been paying it for 3 years.
Okay.
How would it have stayed in force?
Yes. And so they canceled the policy, but you have documentation. You have proof that the premiums have been coming out as scheduled. Is that right?
Yes. And not only that, after they terminated me as a customer, they continued to withdraw money unbeknownst to me.
I see. Okay. Have you been in touch with somebody from the insurance company, not just the agent, but have you called the customer service line?
They won't talk to me. They have orders not to talk to me.
Okay.
And not only that, sir, I got that policy and I have the date tattooed in my brain. And they claimed I got it this past year in October, and that isn't true. They fixed it on the computer so it would show like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for that background. I'm so sorry that you're going through this. Listen, if you, you have a policy that was canceled for non-payment, but you have proof of the payment, basically you need to promptly follow these steps. You need to gather evidence, get all the relevant documents that show and prove you made the payments. Bank statements would be what you're looking for there. You need to call the customer service or billing department and provide the details. What you're wanting to do is to request an investigation. So, ask the insurer to investigate the matter and reinstate your policy retroactively if the payment error is on their end. And you're going to want a written confirmation of the investigation and keep a record of all the communication. These insurance companies are under the authority of the insurance commissioner and have certain protocols that they have to follow, or else you could report them to the insurance commissioner, and that would not result in a good thing for them. You're going to want to look for any kind of processing delays. If you can't get through on customer service or you don't get the issue resolved, you're going to want to escalate it to a higher department. And then if you have to, you could seek regulatory support. So what you would do next is go to your state's Department of Insurance and provide all the evidence and the details of your interactions with the insurer and get the state's Department of Insurance involved. That's their role in overseeing all of this. And you're going to want to keep documentation for everything. So I think that's your next step here, Diane. I know it's not easy and it's going to be frustrating at times, but I'm confident you'll get there eventually, and you may need to escalate it to the Department of Insurance there in Texas. Thanks for calling today. Lord bless you. Let's go. We'll stay in Texas. Marla, go right ahead.
Okay. Hi. I have a scenario. Four siblings own property, for share. Two want to sell. One does not. The other has not made their mind up. I was calling to find out what would be a good way of resolving this type of issue. Without,
yeah.
Well, just a good way of, and I brought up a buyout, and that's fallen on deaf ears.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get clear on the next step.
Yeah. Well, are they not able to afford a buyout, or what's the issue there?
I'm not sure. It's just that when it came up, it just didn't. It's no other conversation around it, so. I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, I realize this can be challenging, and it's as much navigating the conversation as it is the mechanics of how four siblings with different desires regarding a piece of real property go about that in terms of valuing it and selling it. And I realize whenever it's family, it's even more complicated. So stay right there. Let's unpack this right on the other side of this break. We'll be right back on Faith and Finance.
In rural Malawi, baby Esther was taken in by her grandparents when her mother died. Resources were scarce, and Esther suffered from malnutrition for years until God transformed her life. Today, through Cross International, Esther receives nutritious meals, drinks clean water, and is taught about the hope found only in Jesus. But other children are still waiting. Make an eternal impact on a child now with a $62 gift at crossinternational.org/faith.
Hope is the thing that gets you up in the morning when you know that God cares, but you haven't seen any evidence of it in the last few days. Hope drives you onward when you want to quit and stop. Hope keeps your dream alive while you're waiting.
Dr. David Jeremiah shares his message, Hope, an Anchor for Life, on the next Turning Point Weekend Edition.
Listen to Turning Point, Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom?
Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have 3 money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile. Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We stand on the biblical truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are endowed by Him with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today, 800-525-7000. Before the break, we were talking to Marla in Texas. She's inherited a property along with her 3 siblings. 2 of them want to sell it. 1 wants to keep it. 1 is undecided, and they're wondering how to agree on what to do. Is it true, Marla, that you're one of the ones that is wanting to sell, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And so, you know, when you're dividing inherited property, where some want to keep and some want to sell, it's challenging. I mean, we just kind of understand that right up front. The ownership rights essentially say that if it's inherited by multiple heirs, so in this case, siblings, and there's no specific instructions, all the heirs share equal ownership rights. And so the decisions have to be unanimous, or you have to follow legal guidelines in your state. Nobody wants to do that. So those who want to sell are entitled to their share of the property's value. Those who want to keep the property then have to be willing to compensate the others for their share. So typically what you would do is hire a professional appraiser to determine the fair market value. And then that is used to calculate each person's share. And then either they would buy out, selling heirs, and so they would essentially keep the property and pay for, either through financing or cash if they're able to, the other's portion. And then you would sell the property out and just split the proceeds. And then those that end up wanting to keep the property, if there's more than one, would put a co-ownership agreement in place, a formal agreement that outlines the terms and the usage and the maintenance and, you know, the eventual sale and all of those kinds of things. And so typically you'd have a family meeting and discuss the options, and kind of everyone understands their rights, and you'd agree on the process for the valuation. And then, you know, you would hire the professionals, the real estate attorney and, you know, the advisor to deal with any tax implications, that kind of thing. Now, in your situation where there's a disagreement, I think you need to just kind of prepare for that conversation. And I think going into that, you need to be clear about what you want. And then you need to anticipate their concerns, because we realize there's emotional attachments. There may be financial challenges. And so I think you need to find the right time and setting. I would, go into it with some empathy, acknowledging, listen, I understand this home means a lot to you. I know this is a difficult conversation. I need to think at the same time about my financial situation and what's fair for everyone involved, and kind of frame this issue as a shared challenge, and then, start to explore alternative solutions. So whether that's, getting financing, to pay for it, you're being willing to be flexible and how long that takes and ultimately getting it resolved. But I think at the end of the day, you need to stay firm, and yet I think be gracious in how you approach it. And I realize this is not a simple conversation. And yet, everyone's entitled to be able to get access to their portion in whatever way they want, whether that's continued ownership or through a sale. So I know it's not a quick fix, but I think those are at least the steps, Marla, you need to take.
Okay, great. Thank you. I think you're right on this. Okay, well, I appreciate your information, and thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, Marla. Lord bless you. We appreciate you being on the program today. Let's go to Ohio and welcome Tim to the broadcast. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, hello,
Rob.
Sir.
How you
thank
doing
you
today?
For being with us. Sure, I'm doing great.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, I just want to thank you and give you a testimony, too, when you say give a testimony. I was a novelist investor, but between Dan Celia and yourself, I've made up some time and made up some with all your information and also staying biblically sound. But my question is,
thank you.
I wanted to get you last Friday because I had I'm turning 65 next Sunday, and I went through that interview with Social Security, and I wanted to make sure that I signed that waiver for B because I'm still working and I'm not going to retire till I'm 70. But how do you, when you do retire or whatever, how do you find, because you see all the advertisements about use us and we'll get you the best Medicaid and all that. And so that's my question for now.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, I appreciate your kind remarks about the program. That means a lot. If you signed the Medicare, or if you waived Medicare Part B because you're still working and covered by an employer-sponsored health plan, you can enroll in Medicare Part B later under a special enrollment period when you retire. So you wouldn't have any penalty so long as you're covered by an employer group health plan based on active employment. And you enroll within 8 months after employment or group health, that coverage ends, whichever comes first. And then at that point, you'd sign up for Medicare, at ssa.gov or by phone and, work through the steps there. In terms of, thinking about Medigap versus Medicare Advantage, just kind of simply the Medigap or what's called a Medicare supplement would be best for people who want broad coverage. They prefer flexibility to see any doctor. If you have frequent or high medical costs, that can be better under the Medigap. You can afford a higher monthly premium and you don't need the extra benefits. Medicare Advantage Part C is going to be best for people who want the lower monthly premiums. You value kind of an all-in-one plan, so they, you can bundle the medical and the drug, Part D, and the extra benefits like dental and vision and so forth. You're comfortable with networks, you don't travel much, and you can manage kind of the co-pays and the out-of-pocket costs. So, if you travel frequently or live in multiple states, you probably want Medigap. If you prefer the predictable costs and broad access, you probably want Medigap. If you instead want the low premium and you want the extra benefits like dental, vision, and hearing, then that's probably Medicare Advantage. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And again, I mean, is there in each state or do you just go to besides the Medicare.gov or whatever, do you go to just you know, because like I said, you see all these commercials or they're nailing me all the time now that I'm turned 64, getting ready to turn 65. Everybody and their grandmother hits you up with buy it from us. We'll get you lower. And I'm also a veteran. So, and a lot of them were, you know, like they're going to sign you up automatically and all this other. But my other, can I ask you a quick question too?
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to teach my grandson how to budget and how to be better. I tried to look online or whatever, if you had any books or anything, or is there somewhere that I can go and teach?
Yes. I would say using the FaithFi app would be a great way to do that. So I don't know if you've looked at that. You could go to our website, faithfi.com, and check it out. That would be a really helpful tool. And if he's a grandson, would probably be in that age category where smartphones are kind of just second nature, and app-based money management would be the best way to go. If you just head to our website, Tim, faithfi.com, click app. It'll give you all the details, and I think that could be a great tool for you and your grandson. Thanks for calling. We'll be right back.
The enemy of your soul wants you to believe that where you are is where you have to stay, that it's some kind of a dead-end street and you can't get out. It's a cul-de-sac and it's a lie. It's not true. You don't have to be where you are if you don't want to be.
Dr. David Jeremiah continues his series, Hope and Anchor for Life, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Let's think about what God has done. I would wager that his top news story is still that the free salvation through the blood of Jesus Christ is available to all. I wager that will be the top news story until that salvation is no longer available. You will have made your decision for eternity. He doesn't ask us to do anything he won't, and then he does above what we can possibly do.
Hear Todd Herman on A Disciple's View, weekdays 12 p.m. Central on AFR.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Here in this segment today, we look forward to our visit with Jerry Boyer on Fridays with his market update, and also a regular contributor here, Walker Wildman from AFA, of course. And Walker updates us on what's happening with AFA action related to corporate engagement. We'll get to that in just a moment. Jerry, first, you and I had a chance to visit yesterday with several hundred advisors on the line with David Bonson, and you talked about some of your thoughts on where we might be headed here in 2025. Of course, next week, a new administration coming into office, and there's all kinds of changes coming from that. Give us your just kind of forward-looking outlook for the markets and the economy.
Yeah, the forward-looking outlook is fairly positive. And there's something interesting that happened this week. You know how we talk about how in the weird, bizarro world of Keynesian economics, bad news in the economy is good news for markets, mm-hmm. and good news in the economy is bad news for markets? What's interesting is we got some good news in the economy this week, and markets went up anyway. So, you know, what's beginning to happen is the way the market is supposed to work is if the economy is doing well, the market's supposed to do well.
Yes.
The economy is doing badly, the market market's supposed to do badly. Because the market is just, you know, our share in the economy. That's all. You're just owning a piece of the economy when you own, you know, shares in when you own stock. And so when things get disintegrated, what happens is the markets move on what we think the Fed will do, not on what's actually good or bad. This week, the Fed signals were, hey, the economy's doing pretty well. And people think, oh, well, the Fed's not going to cut rates. And the market signal, yeah, they probably won't. Usually that would be bad news for the market. But instead, markets are looking forward to a greater growing economy, and they're showing better earnings. So it's like sanity was starting to get restored to market dynamics this week. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Let's pay attention. Oh, the economy's better? Well, then the stock market should go up. Rather than the economy's better, the stock market should go down because they're going to end the morphine drip. So I think markets are really looking forward to the Trump economy. And that's not just Trump supporters. Right. I mean, someone could have voted against them, but their stocks are going up, too.
Yes.
So if you like low taxes and low regulation, then you're going to like what's likely to come with the tax code. And I had some off the record meetings. I can't say where, in a secret location this week. And someone who basically writes tax policy for Trump and doing it again is laying out some very aggressively low tax rates, not just low, but like lowest in the world corporate tax rates. That's good for Republicans, and that's good for Democrats, and that's good for independents. It's good for anybody who participates in the markets.
It must have been Jackson Hole, right, Jerry? Nothing happens apart from Jackson Hole if it involves the economy.
It was a little closer to Jekyll Island, and I won't say any more than that.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, Jerry, before we bring Walker in and turn our attention to corporate engagement, I mean, what you're describing really more closely aligns with the biblical model for how the market should be an accurate representation, and interest rates for that matter as well, of what's really going on in terms of God's design for wealth creation, right?
Exactly. And when the central bank artificially lowers interest rates, it's like looking in a skinny mirror at the store and saying, boy, I really look great. An economy has to earn its interest rate. So having low inflation, not being covenant breakers, low default risk, whatever. But instead, when the central bank pumps money into the system, it makes us act like we're all savers, but we're not. Yeah. This isn't savings. This is just new money creation. So what happens? Does it stimulate growth? No, it just stimulates prices. And what do we call that? Inflation. So that's the design of man. In Psalm 2, it says, the Lord laughs. The nations conspire together against the Lord and against his anointed. They imagine a vain thing. And that's what socialism is. It's the vain thing. It's what the devil said to Jesus. Hey, just turn the stones into bread. Keynesian economics, we're getting real spiritual here. Keynesian economics says mankind can turn stones into bread, but we can't. We can't print wealth. We can only print money. And if you print money and don't create wealth, you don't get more stuff. You just get more expensive stuff.
Wow. That's well said, Jerry. Boy, we could stay on that for a while. Let's turn our attention, though, to corporate engagement, because when we deploy capital, and that's how we, going back, I guess, to the maritime trade in the 1400s and 1500s, I mean, those were the first investments, right? We're actually a part owner of these companies. And with that is conferred some sort of responsibility and an opportunity to really speak into these companies. And Walker, I'm so thankful for the role you've taken to really lead this charge with Jerry along your side, but out in front of so many of the other national Christian ministries in stepping into this role of being an influencer and affecting change on Wall Street. I know you have a lot on your plate right now with that. Give us an update on some of the things you've been working on recently.
Yeah, so we're focusing on a couple different companies. So AFA obviously has investments. We have stocks, and so we decided a couple years ago that hey, we need to leverage these investments that are invested in publicly traded companies. We need to use these for proxy voting. There's no reason we shouldn't be showing up and sharing our opinion and our view on various issues at these corporate board meetings annually. So that's what we decided to start doing. The biggest target on our list, we're focusing on a couple different companies this year, but the main one that I just, you know, every week I just turn my attention to is Apple. Apple's the largest, depending on what day of the week it is, but most of the time they're the largest publicly traded company and the largest tech company as well. And they're a big offender when it comes to family values and when it comes to protecting minors from harmful content, including pornography. So the Supreme Court actually just heard a case this week. They heard oral arguments on age verification for minors accessing pornographic material. So this has broad implications, this subject matter does. But what I'm going to be talking to Apple about in February is about their internal policies when it comes to protecting minors, whether it's child sexual abuse material, which is otherwise known as CSAM. Apple just hasn't done enough on that front, in my opinion. But there's also other tools that Apple doesn't offer parents to protect specifically teenagers 13 to 17 from harmful content. So Apple's on our list this year. We're just going to hone in on them for the most part and really hope that they turn the page on this era of bad leadership when it comes to protecting minors.
Hmm. Wow. Well done. I mean, I can't think of a more critical issue than that, Walker. Jerry, I know you and I have talked about just some of the other issues on the horizon, one being financial surveillance, right?
Yeah, something really amazing happened after January 6th, which is the Biden administration pulled in a lot of banks and payment services, you know, PayPal, Schwab does a payment service, Bank of New York Mellon, Bank of America, et cetera, and said, we want to talk to you about, you know, finding terrorism, you know, basically characterizing January 6th as terrorism. And so this is one of these things when you have violence or whatever, you have an uprising, government can say, use that as an excuse to attack the Bill of Rights. Now, the government would not be able under the Fourth Amendment to go out and look at everybody's transactions without probable cause. So they pressured the banks and the payment services to do so instead. And a number of the proposals that AFA is working on that we're working with, they're AFA's proposals. We just run the plumbing, would be, you know, PayPal, there's one coming up on that one, Schwab as well. We want to know, what did you give them? The House Judiciary Committee said this is illegal. You cannot surveil. What did they surveil? So, like, were they out there looking for people who are buying the ingredients to bombs? You could maybe understand that. Like, you still need the Fourth Amendment protection, but you can understand that. No, it's people who were shopping at Cabela's. It was people who were buying Bibles. It was people who were, you know, giving to Alliance Defending Freedom. Those are the that puts you on the surveillance dragnet, and they were pulling in private transactions to report to the government. That is blatantly illegal. It's blatantly immoral, and it's completely non-fiduciary. And AFA is in those particular cases where they own shares in the company, like PayPal or Schwab, Bank of New York Mellon. They're saying you need to give an account for this. You can't just say we had to go to the meeting because it's the government and not say anything else about it. And we need to know what your policies are in writing, not in writing in private behind the firewall, in writing out in public, when you will and will not share client information. So surveillance, Walker's been very focused on Apple, and that is great. He is taking no prisoners with that company. And kind of the next wave you're going to see AFA, the next wave of meetings are going to be about this financial surveillance stuff. You shouldn't have to be a different kind of banking client if you're a conservative. You shouldn't have less privacy when you're dealing with your bank if you're a conservative or a Christian.
Walker, just a minute left. You know, this has become a big tool in the tool belt for AFA action, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And we're seeing other ministries. I know Jerry's working with other ministries and nonprofit organizations that have millions in investments to activate this tool. I mean, it's really a no-brainer. And this really fits right in with Christian activism and the fact that as believers, we need to utilize all that we've been given stewardship responsibility over for God's purposes and to advance godly values in society and government and corporate America. So this is really the beginning. I think the years ahead are really bright, And we're grateful for all other ministries that have come on board. And we want to encourage individuals out there that own investments themselves to make sure that they're voting at these meetings and make sure they're engaging with their votes.
Well said.
AFA was first. Yeah. AFA was first. The others are following.
Well said. Yeah, you're right, Jerry. And the others are following, and that's good news. We need to see a groundswell of these companies taking the same steps that AFA has now for over a year. God bless you, gentlemen. Thanks for your time today.
God bless you.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Folks, before we go today, just a quick reminder, we're rounding out our partnership this week with Preborn. Well, we'll always be partnered with Preborn, but our campaign this week is to save 4,500 babies with free ultrasounds. You can be a part of it. Go to AFR.net, or call 877-616-2396, Preborn 2025. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.